Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument, and has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I'm trying to share the video as we start the show. It's great to have you on, everybody, here today. My guest is Troy Dexter. Somebody has their speaker on. He's been on a couple of times before. Where is that coming from?
Maybe me. I could be.
There you go. Okay. Anyway,
Troy's
been on a couple of times, and
never on the video part.
No, this is new. This is the first, and bear with us because it's hard because we try to share the video on all the pages. It's on LA Talk Radio's Facebook page, but I'm trying to show it so that everybody can catch it. So it's kind of a scramble because you can't do anything until the Facebook Live goes on. So it's a little bit crazy. So if you see me texting, I'm not being rude. I'm just trying to get it on all the pages. But anyway, I want to welcome Troy. The last time he was on, we talked about his album, and we talked a little about the creative process with him. He had brought some clips that he had done with his wife, and they were talking about the collaboration, and some new things are happening. I'm going to let Troy explain that, but I wanted to go into more detail, especially the session work, because you had done some work with Stephen Bishop, who we've had on the show, and it's some beautiful. The album is just killer, and also too, it was an interesting opportunity because this week, this Friday, actually, you're going to be playing with a full band live at the Tullos.
That's right.
And so I wanted to get into how are you going to realize the album live, which a lot of people don't really think about. You know, you're in the studio, you're overdubbing, you're playing all these different guitars. How do you bring that to the stage? So, but before I do that, Lori, if you can, give them the details on the Vitello's gig.
Ah, okay. Get out your pens and pencils. So upstairs at Vitello's, which is in Studio City, and it's this Friday. The show starts at 7:30, and we have the wonderful Terry Woolman, who's going to be opening for about half an hour. He's a friend of all of ours, and we just thought he'd just be the perfect match to open this show. And this will be Troy's third show there at Vitello's, right? Solo show. And we did a CD release for Shop Talk last year, and we're going to do some new tunes, I think, this year.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. We'll have a... I think I was a little short last time, and I've got plenty
you
of stuff.
You got taller than me?
I got taller. I got taller and wrote more songs. So.
Your Les Paul looks a little smaller, so you might have been getting bigger.
Make your reservations in advance.
Yeah. It's this Friday, 6:15 at Vitello's.
At Vitello's. There you go.
You could find the links on any of our pages, too, actually.
Yes. So
Music Magic or Troy's page.
And I'll be posting more of it during the week.
Cool.
So that's. But anyway, let's talk about that first. So, okay. So now you're playing live. You're putting a band together. You're doing a lot of the clips. I know you're doing more than just the album, but how do you approach that? What are you trying to do? Because you do some pretty interesting stuff on the album. How do you reproduce that, or are you trying to reproduce that live?
Well, yes and no. I mean, on the album, I did a lot of kind of interesting layering of textures and mm-hmm. keyboards and multiple guitars and stuff. And it's just a four-piece band, you know, so it's really a simple, short answer. And that is I just kind of play the melodies the best I can and don't really cover much of the harmonized melodies, but I'll take liberties with them. And really just take the handcuffs off the band. You know, I have pretty good clean charts for everybody, and I really want them to take up the space that, you know, is taken up on the album with overdubs and stuff. I want them to just fill it up as they...
So the approach is basically to have the band just kind of interpret it their way.
Definitely. And I really want that... excuse me. I really want that special live conversation that happens with all of us. And, you know, and in a live setting, I find that, you know, if you try to, you know, put a guy in each thing that was the overdub on the album, you know, like an extra keyboard or percussion and all that, I mean, it gets chaotic and noisy, and not to mention room on stage, you know, gets sucked up really fast, you know. So I'm really okay with just a four-piece thing and letting the guys just do their thing and listen to one another, which I feel like we really do, and it just creates an extra little bit of space for everybody to stretch a little bit, and I want that. You know,
so what is the lineup?
Well, it's my son Taylor on drums, who I've used.
Woohoo!
Yeah,
he's such a great drummer.
This kid is like my number one if I can get him, and he is just something else, man. He's toured all over the world, and he's become a great producer now, and. Yeah, Taylor Dexter, check him out. Find him. Use him. He's good. And then my good buddy Bob Emmett is on keyboards, who I've worked with. I don't think he's on Facebook, so I don't really know how he lives. But
because he doesn't post it.
But Bob, you know, I've known Bob for, God, at least 30 years, and we've just done every kind of gig together and just every kind of situation. And he's just one of those guys that's such a great player, such a great musician. He has perfect pitch. He's so good at managing his sounds. He's a great soloist and really understands harmony. He's a great producer, too, so... So I'm really lucky to have him. And then Chaz Frictell on bass, who's, you know, he was with Michael McDonald for like 18 years and Chuck Mangione, and he's just a good laughing buddy. He's a great singer. He's the guy that sang the theme to Saved by the Bell, too. So that's a fun,
wow.
fun fact.
Are you going to do that in the set?
Maybe. But he's just a great human, a great friend, and with a real rich history in the biz. So,
well, it's interesting because it seems like everybody's a producer that's in the group, so that must give a different perspective in terms of how everybody plays together, because they all are experienced at putting it together and arranging.
That's true. I never thought about that. Certainly there are seasoned recording musicians, and I think that when you get with guys who have had that track record, you know, there's just a lot of listening, peripheral listening and interplay and fun. And, you know, people, the guys are just not only in their own world. We're really, like, having fun together as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what we're doing from bar to bar, you know.
If I could add one other point, though, is that because you guys, like, that's your band. You always play with them. So they know you and they know the music and what you're going for, and the experience of that configuration being on stage together definitely plays into the level of what goes on the show.
I think so. I think by now, you know, even though
read
we've
each other
just done a few gigs really in total, but I mean that's it comes back and they're into it. You know, they're really supportive and just I think the energy of us being so close and great friends and mm-hmm. my kid being family and so on, you know, would just we like each other.
Yeah,
and makes for good music on stage. You know, we really do have a good time, and I think that the audience has a great time too at our shows.
Yeah.
You know, so
I've seen it.
No. Looking so forward to it.
Now, let's talk a little bit about what you're going to do for in terms of equipment wise and your tone. Now, you brought another pedal in. You brought a new device. a new toy. Are you going to use this on the show?
Probably not. I will probably use the big pedal board that I brought in the very first time I was here. And that's one that was put together for me by Dave Phillips at LA Sound Design, who just does incredible work for the best guitar players. And he just builds the best pedal boards ever. So that's really my main board that I use. But it's heavy, so I didn't bring it today. And I normally don't travel with it because it's big and it's an extra cost and so on. You know, the thing I brought today is one of a couple smaller pedal boards that I can just fit in an overhead carry-on suitcase thing. You know,
that's been the theme a few times, right? What's light and can travel well, right?
Yeah, well, we were talking before the show about some of the different ones. Like the Helix is really popular right now. And the next time I'm going to have, I have a preamp that I want him to try that he's going to really like. I don't have all of the preamps yet from it's made by Synergy. And they've been ordered. But literally, it's the front end of some of these very famous boutique amps.
Cool.
And I can plug it in the board with a speaker emulator, and it sounds really good.
Oh, can't wait to check it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in terms of just the travel pedal board whole universe, I mean, one thing that's become a real issue is that when us dudes travel, you can carry a guitar and a carry-on bag on the plane, you know, but you can't really have a third thing, you know. So, like, for instance, last time I was at Dave Phillips' place, you know, at LA Sound Design, he was building a board for somebody, Randy Jacobs or somebody, that literally was with these mini pedals, you know, and that could go into his suitcase. And it's like, wow, that's a thing, because you can only carry your guitar and, you know, you don't want to check a bag or pay extra or whatever. So the idea is that you just want to stick it in with your clothes in between your underwear and, like, have your pedal board, you know.
Yeah.
So it is a consideration, definitely. But in town, you know, when I do sessions and when I work at home out of my own studio, I'll use the big board for sure. It just sounds so good and has everything I need on it, pretty much. So
what amp are you going to use?
We'll probably use my I have this mini Mesa Boogie rectifier amp that's I forget what it's, the 25 watt rectifier head. It's the one that doesn't have reverb on it. It's just the amp head. And then I'll bring either a Celestion 12 inch speaker or my Mesa Boogie cabinet, which has two speakers, if I feel like. One of the things about Vitello's, which is that it's upstairs. There's no elevator, so it's upstairs at Vitello's is literally the name of the club.
Yeah,
so.
No elevator.
So that is the thing. We got a schlep.
Not even a dumbwaiter.
Not even a dumbwaiter. Yeah,
don't see too many 4x12 cabinets going upstairs.
Yeah, hey, no.
We got a B3 up there on top.
You did?
Yep, we did.
No way. Oh, my God. Awesome.
We did.
Wow. So
I can see the pain in your eyes as you remember that.
We had a lot of guys doing that.
That's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, and it, you know, I really don't, like to, with my music, I don't like to play too loud. It's not a real loud room. I like it to be comfortable, but have energy to it. And really, one 12-inch speaker is plenty, you know, so.
Yeah.
I like the sound of the, I mean, just the tone, even though I'm not, like, blasting the tone of the 212 Boogie cabinet that I have, that's great, but I don't know if I'll schlep it. But usually I use the 12-inch, the 112, like, KK cabinet from the 90s. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. So, no, so. I mean, it'll get you that room up there especially, that's plenty of volume.
Totally. You know, and the other thing is I'm a big believer in having a spare everything, you know. So I'll have this little pedal board. I'll have a spare amp. I have, like, a spare crate amp that's just a solid-state $100 thing just in case. I can just, like, plug it into the speaker, and it's just done, you know. So
that's good. Well, that's old school.
Yeah.
You always, in concerts and stuff, I remember they would just, if a head went out, they just pop another
switch
one in,
up.
Plug
that's
it in,
it.
Boom.
Yeah, and I have this this crate amp that actually sounds pretty good. It's the Power Brick or whatever it's called, and it's just, you know, this big, basically, and it was $100 at the time, and I just fine. And I have had the Mesa Boogie thing go down when I was in a pit orchestra, and thank God I had that thing in my car because I could just switch it out, and this was seamless,
yeah.
You know.
So, yeah. No, that's true. Now, which guitars are you going to use?
I'll probably bring this one and then probably my number one Strat, which I think maybe, did I bring that last time? It's a blonde one. I can't
you
remember.
You brought the Strat before.
Yeah, yeah.
But I notice this unusual guitar here.
Yeah, that's my.
I was wondering if you're going to take that one to the concert.
Maybe I will. One of the things at Vitello's, and I love the room, love the people, love everything about it, except the electricity there I have a tough time with. With the single coil pickups, like on a Strat or a Tele, man, it's buzzy there.
You know,
this guitar, no problem. This guitar kind of, I played it, but last time I played there for somebody else, I used this guitar. It was like a Beatles kind of show, and yeah, this was great. So, thank you for the suggestion. Maybe I'll bring this one.
Well, let's take a look a little bit at, even though this isn't what you're going to use that night, you might as well, since you brought this pedal board, you got to show us what you're getting out of this puppy.
Sure. Well, I mean, this is the Boss ME80. You know, you can find it like Sweetwater or Sam, you know, it's just sort of one of these portable all-in-one pedal boards, and I got it because, like I said before, I believe in having like a spare everything, and so this pedal board was basically like $299 or so, under $300, yeah. Basically, and it basically has and does everything. I don't think it does it as well, of course, as the is my good stuff, but this is definitely a killer like Swiss Army knife, you know, in an emergency kind of thing. And I've used it on shows when I knew that I wasn't going to have a lot of stage room and stuff. You know, it just has all kinds of different overdrives and compression and choruses and modulation, just everything you can think of. And it does a couple of weird things that my main pedal board doesn't do. For example, it has like, it has a pedal on it that you can use for volume or a wah-wah pedal or whatever. But one thing that it does that's kind of unique is like this voice weird thing. It's like, it sounds like a voice, I guess. That's what they call it.
It kind of emulates, it's kind of like an electronic talk box.
Yeah, kind of like that kind of thing. And, you know, it's got the whammy pedal and stuff, which... Is that it? Real practical stuff, you know.
Like. Now that pedal board has the COSM technology, right? How do you like the amp simulations?
I haven't used it. I mean, honestly, I am one of those guys that, like, I'm in my studio. I've always got a cabinet mic'd. I'm not an amp simulator dude.
So you just use it for the effects?
Totally, like an effects thing. And it has two modes, basically. The manual mode, where it's literally like having, you know, six or eight pedals that you can like adjust the knobs in real time and do all that, or you can do it where it's like presets, which I never do. Now, if I were to, you know, get a gig where it was like, you know, six nights a week doing a show where I would have like programmed set lists and stuff, I might use it. The only thing I did a show recently where I had like a split second to do like the intro to a Prince thing, you know, it was like a tribute show. And so I switched it to the program mode rather than manual mode, so I could just really quickly get this in. And then go back to my regular, yeah, so.
Yeah, and one of the things that's cool about this box, a lot of guys that use a lot of electronics and sampling and sequencers and stuff, it's MIDI switchable, so you can MIDI control it. He doesn't even have to touch it. You could literally change in the middle of the song while you're playing.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you're running with a click track, they could do it, you know, a computer could do it for you. But yeah, it's just, you know, I generally just set it like a regular pedal board with a little bit of compression. I can get my overdrive on and off. And then if a chorus, if I want to. Not bad, right?
Yeah, no, it's got all of the classic Boss pedals in it.
Phaser. Yeah, and then the delay, which behaves like the DD5 or whatever, where you have to kind of hold it down for a couple of seconds to... to do the tap tempo.
Oh, you can tap tempo it.
Yeah, too. Yeah. And it has a bunch of different, you know, modes of that, and analog and reverse and stuff. It really does a lot of stuff. It really is cool. So I'm fine with it in a pinch, and I always carry it with me just in case.
You know? Yeah, and it's not that big. It's pretty. It's like as big as my laptop.
Yeah. So
you'll have to hold it up later, so all the mystery of people watching can see what it looks like.
I can do it now. How about now?
Here.
Okay.
Yeah. Hold. Yeah. Let her hold it. Yeah, it's really not that big at all.
There it is. Am I getting it on Facebook?
I think
Live?
So.
Yeah.
It's not really big. It's no. And it's got everything in it.
Yeah, and these pedals here are like two in one. So like you can press this one and separately this one. You know, so it's like eight different ones. Turn the reverb on and off, and all the effects different on and off, and so on. So. It's pretty cool, pretty
and it's
fun.
It's not that expensive. It's pretty reasonable. And
he's
not using it, but it does have these amp combinations that I've played with some of the Cosm stuff. Like I have the Boss Fender Reverb, and I have the Boss Deluxe Reverb amp, and they're really close.
Awesome.
I mean, it's a good impulse, IR type of impulse response emulator, which is pretty interesting.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it is amazing how far the just the computer and direct and amp simulation technology has come. It's astonishing. I'll give a shout to my friend Brian Kahanek out there, who is he's really good at that kind of stuff. And yeah, he would be a good candidate for the show, actually. He's such a good player and just oozes feel and tone. And he does a lot of things where he'll record it in a virtual amp, you know, and get the performance that he wants, and then, you know, when nobody's in the house, he'll reamp it and, you know, into something real. But, you know, he's really got that together. But
so he records it, just so everybody knows, he records it dry, just the tone, and he can shoot that through another amp and actually just re-record with the performance is already on.
Right, but to get the performance, I think he would use, like, a, you know, whatever, you know,
he'll use an amp,
simulator, you know, a virtual amp.
But he's also laying a track of just the pure guitar tone so that he can run it to any amp.
Yeah.
So, that's a lot of people in the studio. They'll run it clean, and then they can change amps and decide what they want.
Yeah, I mean, I would want to hear what it's sort of going to sound like, you know, and then reamp the clean signal or whatever, you know, but... you know, I'm not that far in the weeds, honestly. I'm just more simple, and I'm lucky that I have a room, you know, in my studio to do that. And I just always keep a mic'd cabinet, and I never fake it. I always mic an amp, you know. So. And, you know, I get
that 1x12 cabinet that you're using, is that just a standard Celestion in there?
Mm-hmm. It's just the one that they sell. Is it the Black Shadow or something like that? They sell it at the Mesa Boogie store, you know, right off the
shelf. It's a Mesa Boogie. Okay, so it's probably there. I think that's an Electro Voice if it's a
Lee
Black Widow.
Yeah, something like that. Something like whatever they just sell from the store that they recommend that they put in their cabinets, you know. So,
well, let's talk, now that we've gone through your setup, you got to talk about this guitar.
Cool, yeah, I'm happy.
Talk about it. Let's hear it.
It's an interesting wiring to it.
And that is the trick here.
No, you can hand me that. That's
fine. Yeah, this is the newest addition to the fleet, and quite honestly, I'm still kind of making friends with it. But I'll be honest. I've never owned a guitar with P90s before, so I just like, that's what I should have one. You know, so. I mostly use it like a regular configuration. I don't really use this middle pickup that much. So I guess I can quickly demo some of that stuff. But, you know, it's got a nice kind of jazzy sound.
Yeah, no, those P90s are mellow.
Yeah, they're mellow, but they sort of have their own nice little character to them, you know. So, and then, you know, when you go over here to the, or here, to the
treble pickup,
yeah, you can... Got a nice little bite to it. Not quite like a Telecaster, not, you know, but... pretty cool. And then when I get both of the outside pickups going, it has a nice sweet sound.
Now you have the volume controls for those pickups are up full right now.
Yeah, just about. This is both pickups, the outside pickups full, and this middle pickup is not on at all. So I'm gonna get rid of some of this delay here so I can bunk it up. So it's pretty fun. You know,
You have on there, he was telling me a little bit before the show, you have three volume controls and one master tone.
Right? Correct. Yeah.
So now you have the volume off on the middle pickup.
Yeah. Because
the middle pickup, the pickup selector is like a standard Gibson Epiphone treble.
Right.
Both pickups, neck pickup. But when you dial in with the middle pickup, it's in every selection.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
So
figured that out quickly.
So anyway, dial it in.
Yep.
And show them what it sounds like with the third pickup, because it is a different sound.
Right. So here's all three pickups together, which it's kind of bland to me, but it's not bad. But.
You're getting a little more top end.
Yeah, and it kind of has this... I mean, for this kind of guitar, it kind of has a weird... like a Strat Ataphase sound. Like, for example, here's these two pickups now. And...
It does sound like the... When you put the switch between the bridge and the middle.
Yeah, it's in that universe, you know... Which is kind of fun. And then, of course, when I go all the way over here, it would be these two pickups and the similar kind of Strat-ish, a little darker sounding, I think, you know.
Yeah, the P90s give it a little more girth to it.
Yeah, it's got a little more richness. And in a track or in a live situation, it's sort of a toss-up whether that's going to cut through like a Strat would, you know. But it's fun. It's a cool, different kind of sound.
It's a great sounding guitar, and it's pretty versatile. I mean, you get a lot of different tones out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it can really, like, I'll turn this middle pickup off again. This is mostly how I use it, but I'll either use it to get this bite. Or I'll go to the back pickup here, or the neck pickup, and maybe roll off the tone, and I can kind of get some nice...
Let me ask you, look down the, we can't show this, but look down the F hole and tell me, is there a block of maple that's under the pickups where the pickups are?
Yeah.
So it's like a 335 where they have the maple all the way to where the bridge is. So that has that extra support. So it's kind of like a 335 where you have, it's semi-hollow, but it has the solid body feel to it. It has the bite of the solid body.
Definitely. And
that's a beautiful color too. That's a really
nice. Really. I mean, it's not a guitar that you see a lot of, but it's not hard to find either. I think you know you go on Sweetwater or whatever, you can get it for like $600 or something like that.
Really? With the three P90s? That's usually rare.
No, it's the Riviera, I think is what it is. And I just happened to find one on Craigslist that was right around the corner from my house. And for once, had cash in my wallet.
That's convenient. Like,
be right back, honey. So it's great, and I'm really enjoying it. It took me a minute to make friends with it, but I'm really enjoying it. Like I said, I used it at Vitello's playing with my friend Brenda Moore, who did like a Beatles tribute, you know, her version of Beatles tunes, and I used it. It was perfect. It was just great. So.
Now, I'm going to have you play. You sent me two clips. To one of them, I'm going to have out of the blues. I'm going to have you play out. But do you want to play either that or the Les Paul on the other clip that you gave me, which is "I Forgive You"?
I'll just play this baby.
It's karaoke for guitar.
Yeah. And these are just bare bones demos that'll be songs from the new album, you know. But
so I'm going to let him play a little bit of this this clip. It's interesting. It's a night, and this is a work demo that he had. So because he's working on a new album, so we're getting a really sneak peek of something. It's
going
to be.
This is just a kind of a MIDI bare bones demo and session prep version of the song, and I use it to practice too and stuff too. So,
all right, I'm going to let you just jam to this for a little bit, and then I'll just cue you, and we'll play about 2 minutes of it.
Sounds good.
You go. So here we go. This is called "I Forgive You."
Pray for me, people. Lost my tuning, but that's okay. All right.
Thank you.
something like that.
Yeah.
That was fun. I'm sorry. I just had to go through the whole song because you started doing other changes.
Well, the obligatory key change.
Obligatory, yeah.
No, you just started doing some other. I'm like, that's just too interesting. Fade out. I'm not going to do that.
But it's everybody a cool took little notes song. Out there.
It's a nice little jam.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm still getting my tuning together here. Sorry about that. But it actually used to be a song that I would sing, but I never was really happy with the words. And I kind of tell this story that it's like, you know, a lot of these kind of blues tunes that like dudes write have like one note in the melody, you know, like the sharp nine or the root, you know, that just hangs on the. So that's why that song has that. It used to be a dude melody with a you know, just it's not a real rangy melody, but it's just how it came out. And so,
no, it's an interesting groove, but it works really nice. I really I like that. It's
thank
really,
you. Thank
are you going to play that live?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
So that'll be at Vitello's. That's going to be cool.
Heck yeah!
But now let's talk a little bit. Because it's moving fast, and I want to make sure we have enough time to set up the last song that you're going to play. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the other session work. And,
sure.
You sent me a couple of clips which from Stephen Bishop's new album.
Yeah,
so tell me a little bit about how that happened in terms of they brought you in. What did they want you? What did they say they wanted you to do, and how did you approach it?
I like the they.
Well, actually, yeah, the producer of that album is an amazing musician named John Gilliton, who's a phenomenal keyboard player who has a rich history in the biz.
I have a gig with him in 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. John, if you're watching,
hi,
my
John.
Brother.
If you're not, we're going to make you watch the archive.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I could talk about him, but, he, you know, we met on couple of concerts where we were kind of reading music and, you know, kind of charted and everything kind of had its lane, you know. And I really didn't know his depth, but I mean, he has a rich history with playing with, you know, Linda Ronstadt
James
and
Taylor.
James Taylor
yeah.
forever. And, you know, he was one of the writers on Patti LaBelle's New Attitude. But I recently did a gig with him. I digress a little bit, but I recently did a gig with John where we just kind of took the handcuffs off and we were just playing jazz and stuff. And it's like, I'm telling you, this guy...
Yeah.
This guy is my kind of keyboard player. Wow. I love him. And
that's
so
great.
I hope we make a lot more noise. But anyway, so he ended up at the helm of Bish's album as a producer in his home studio. And he just did a beautiful job on this thing. I just think it's so nicely done and nicely mixed and beautifully arranged. And, you know, I'm not sure. I have a rich history with Bish, you know, playing with him and whatnot. But I think John kind of cast... you know, each song and had different guitar players and so on. And I ended up doing a couple of pieces that I guess you have, but I just kind of came in and one of the songs, we spent about a half an hour just kind of figuring out our lanes, you know, because Steven's a great guitar player in his own right, but he tunes his guitar a step or two down and I kind of had to find the complementary part for the session and for the song that worked. And
well, who actually called you in? Was it John or was it Steve?
Steven, yeah.
So he said, hey, this guy's good.
Yeah, yeah. So and it was cool because, you know, and he's used other great guitar players, you know, Adam Hawley and Rob Jacobs and all, you know, he's had other
so when you right? came in, what did they have? Just a chord chart?
Yeah. Yeah,
and
chord chart and
what did they say? What
tracks,
did,
you know.
What did
the
they want you to do? Did they give you any direction, or they just said, just do what you want?
Well, like I said, the first song that we did, is it Someone Like You? I think I had to kind of play this. I had to figure out, like, where I was going to have my lane, you know, basically. And Bish kind of had this capoed part and played it up high. And it's like, I figured out that I would do this complimentary part that was lower. It was an acoustic part. And then I think they turned me loose with just doing kind of, you know, this kind of overdub stuff. You know, these kind of just colors and things like that, volume pedal.
If I'm correct on Someone Like You, are you the one playing? I think there's a gut string, right?
I think there is, and I don't think that's me, and that actually might be a sample. I'm not sure. John?
You have to defer to him. Yeah,
yeah. I did not play gut string on that session.
Because there's
did,
like a little fill that's
yeah,
being done
yeah,
on it too.
Yeah. I did the lower kind of stereo complimentary acoustic part where I think I doubled it. And
well, let me play the clip and you tell me what you did. Because there's a lot of guitars in here, so it was kind of hard to, and I didn't know who was doing what, but I knew you'll. But this is Someone Like You, and this is from Stephen Bishop's album Blueprint.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful album.
The album. It really is beautiful.
Great
man.
Album.
Bish is a treasure, and we love him. So
here's Someone Like You.
The days fly by, I stare at the moon and wonder why I'm still here. But I know how I'd feel with someone like you.
Yeah, so like some of that volume stuff.
Like you. Who said love is a dance?
Oh, bish.
The sound of her heartbeat, the rush of romance. Love is the sound of her tears falling on the ground.
I can't resist playing.
Trying not to care for someone like you.
That kind of stuff I did for sure.
For someone like you.
That's a sample or someone else.
Because that sounds like somebody playing.
Yeah, could have been.
And some of those other finger picking. I mean, I can hear Bish on one part, but the other part, it doesn't sound like a sample. If it's a sample, you're awesome.
Yeah,
my hearts have to break. You wait for tomorrow. You wait for
those volume pedal things are really, really, really cool. It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Besides, I mean, it's just a great song.
Yeah, I think that it was hard to hear, but I mean, and there would have been a capo on, but I think I did this thing that was just sort of like. Like those kind of chords, you know, behind it. And Bish kind of had a thing up high. And
yeah.
It's lovely. It's beautifully layered, and you know, Gilliton did a terrific job putting it all together.
Yeah, kind of brought out the best of Bish's style that he already is known for.
That's right. Yeah, know? and he really is. He really kind of finds his own way with chords and harmony. And
well, the interplay too between some of the guitar, especially if that guitar is sampled, it interplays with that electric piano sound, the Tyne piano.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just beautiful the way it the arrangement's great.
That kind of stuff is all over this record.
And then what guitar did you use for the acoustic one?
That was my Martin. I brought that before, the D35.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing is just unbelievable, especially with brand new strings. It's just incredible.
But you guys did that live show at Catalina's last year.
That's right.
So great.
Yeah.
That was so great.
And John was on that gig.
Yeah,
of course. That was so fun because we didn't have a drummer, and John played keyboard and keyboard bass and like kind of did a cajon thing with his third hand or something, and then Jim Wilson.
And played shaker in between.
Yeah. And Jim is a staple with Bish. He's a great keyboard player and piano tuner to the stars and does travels with Bish too, so he's good. All good friends, so fellas.
Now tell me a little bit about Holy Mother, because Bish, this was a big song for him.
Big song for him, and as I understand it, I think he wrote it with Clapton.
Right, and it had a special that made it special in that sense.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm doing anything face melting, but more of this kind of volume swell stuff. And I'm pretty sure I used my Epiphone. The Sheraton for that one.
The Sheraton?
Yeah.
So you were doing a lot of those type of little volume pedal-y things.
Yeah, a lot of those kind of things.
Because this is such a beautiful design. This was a big one that we played for on Bish's song. But let me play a little bit of this clip, Holy Mother.
I think Holly and Robbie Wyckoff sing on this, too. Like they're part of the
choir. Yeah, is it the first song?
I don't remember.
I know she sings on the first song.
Okay.
So here, let me play Holy Mother. This is another one from Blueprint.
Yeah, I'm just doing colors.
Holy Mother,
no, this
hear
isn't
my
one.
Prayer.
Now that's Bish on acoustic.
Somehow I know you're still there. Help me please find peace of mind. Take away this pain. I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait any longer. I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait for you.
I think I might have done an acoustic pass on this too.
Sounds like two guitars.
Holy Mother, hear my cry. I've cursed your name a thousand times. I've felt
that
the anger run
strumming
through my soul.
At this tempo was harder than it seems. Hey, with that click, man.
A hand to hold. Oh, I feel the end is come. No longer my legs will run. But you know I would rather be in your arms tonight.
And there is a little part at the end where where you're playing. But that it sounded like there was two guitar players there.
Yeah, I might have done an acoustic pass on that.
That would have been the Martin, too, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Because it's a beautiful... Yeah, there's more going on. He's playing like this, like... It's not finger-picking, but he's kind of like... I forget. It's like frailing in banjo. He's kind of doing this kind of half-finger-picking.
Yeah, this wispy strum half-picking.
Kind of texture, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you hear those guitars. But the fact that you remember it with a click track... leads me to believe that that's you on that rhythm guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was tough. What did you? But when you heard it, when you were actually recording it, what was done?
Oh, definitely. You know, some drums and bass and keyboard and probably a scratch vocal. So I mean, I got a clear sense of what the tune was about. I actually have never heard the original one. It was this, you know.
Well, Clapton did the original. This was the first time he covered it. And he said that he was a little nervous about it because, you know, it's so famous by Clapton.
Yeah.
But I think he made it his own.
For sure.
It's definitely. But now, did you play with the click or did you just listen to the
band? I think there was a little bit of click and then the track, you know, a good, you know, heaping helping of drums and bass and keyboard and his scratch vocal and stuff, and just got a nice mix in my headphones. And it was a room just like this, you know, it was just a room in John's place, and he was kind of at the helm, and that's how it went down.
But it's interesting because the rhythm track there, would you want the click in there, or would you rather just hear the musicians?
I would want the click when there's a whole note, you know, and I want it soft, you know, like just if the band holds a note, I want to hear the click a little bit to kind of carry me through the whole notes and stuff.
Oh, I see.
Know, just as a crutch, you know, but mostly, you know, the drums, especially if they're the real ones, you know, so.
But what made it difficult in terms of with the click? Was it because it was the tempo?
Well, I wasn't calling out this tune so much as just in general. I mean, you know.
So you're doing a very simple. You're not.
You really gotta lay in the in the right space in the track. And, it's so easy to rush something like that, you know.
Yeah.
It's almost easier to finger pick, you know. And it sounded like that might have been me doing some of that James Taylor-ing. Or whatever, you know. That's obviously not the song, but that style. There was some of that in there, too. So, but that's easier.
That's
at
a beautiful.
Tempo, so.
That's a beautiful arrangement. And that was
great.
It's interesting.
So, yeah,
session.
Again, I didn't do anything mind-melting, but, you know, it's definitely part of doing session work is just...
But a lot of times it's just being tasteful.
And giving the song what it needs, nothing more.
That's exactly what this was. And again, credit to John. He did not overproduce this album. And it is really gorgeous, man. It's really, I could listen to it a lot.
He makes great pizza, too.
Ah, I know.
Seriously.
Serious behind-the-scenes stuff right there. Pizza.
That's it. John.
We're out of time. I just looked at the clock. But I want to kind of set up this last clip. Out of Blues. This is one of the songs coming on your next album, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll and, do it Friday. So tell me a little bit about this, and then that'll take us out.
Well, the song is called Out of the Blues, and it's because it's born out of a blues, but it's not really a blues. It sort of is and sort of isn't. And, you know, as with all my songs, I like to put in some curveballs and twists and some grown-up chord changes to challenge myself, you know. So there's certainly nothing wrong with the simple blues either, but I just threw some other sections in that take it out of the blues and into another section, then it comes back to it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's about it. Other than that, it's just a groove, you know.
So are your songs all done for this next
The
album?
Songs are all done, and the session, I have MIDI demos, like I played, like the first song that I played there. They're all kind of in that state, you know, but the session templates are all ready to get people in there to do it. And
does it have a name yet? It's hard to beat Shop Talk, right?
Yeah. I love the... I'm actually thinking about calling it Nightshades. I'm not sure. That's a
son of Shop Talk.
Son of Shop Talk. thinking about calling it Nightshades because it's just sort of a darker. It's not more complicated, but it's just a darker, richer album harmonically.
You were recording it at night or something.
Yeah, there'll probably be some of that too. But it's going to be a more. I don't know, just richer textures and things, and more songs kind of in a minor key and stuff, but it won't be a downer album by any means.
Well, it'll be interesting to hear, now that we've heard like the sneak peek in the early stages of it, how it evolves into the final album, which will be another excuse to have you come back.
Oh, I can't wait. But you guys are doing a great thing here. I really appreciate what you do.
Well, thank you. It's always exciting to hear what you're doing.
Thank you, man.
But real quick, Lori, thank you for having him back on the show. But also to give the information for Vitello's. And then you were playing another gig, you're saying, in July?
I'm with Wilson Phillips in July, actually, at the Libby Bowl. And I believe that's July.
Santa Barbara.
Yeah, in Ojai. So, come on up or down. Or
keyboards
whatever.
Or guitar?
I'll play keyboards on that.
Keyboards.
With my brother Rob and the band and the Goyles. Yeah.
And so give the information again, if you can, for the Vitello's.
For Vitello's, this Friday the 15th starts at 7:30. We recommend that you get your reservation in advance because it costs more at the door. You can go on to Vitello's website. The links are on all of our pages and more.
And their phone number is 818-769-0905.
You can pick your own seat, your own table. It's very personalized, and you get to be up close and personal with Troy and the band and Terry Wollman, and it's going to be a really lovely night.
A true guitar night.
I have proof from the previous shows.
Yeah, we have a good time.
And you're going to play some of the new songs?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to play this song, too,
at
the show. Anyway, thank you again. It's really great to have you back
on
the show.
Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate
it. I'm jealous. I love these guitars. This is Out of the Blues. Everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week. Here we go, Out of the Blues.